Season 5, Episode 3, Three Girls and a Baby. It opens up with notes and well wishes to Martinez because he just got married, if you remember from the episode prior. And while he's giving out thank you cards for the gifts, Sibwitz is putting away new snacks in the break room. And they have a moment with Medavoy where it's clear that everyone kind of is just annoyed with Medavoy. He gets people rolling their eyes from Kirkendall and Sipowicz. Then Sipowicz gets upset that he gave him the wrong change for the snacks.
I think Sipowicz is annoyed with everyone in this whole scene.
He's annoyed because with everyone?
He has a real fucking attitude with everyone, but Kirkendall only has like a 20. Greg, like, fucks the change up or, like, is talking too much instead of just paying him for the change. And so he's just, like, being a douche the whole morning.
I mean, I understand him, maybe because that's me, but I understand him from the perspective of, I got the snacks, we all pitch in for them, I would like to get paid as soon as possible, obviously, because I put in the money. And then every time Medavoy gives him money, it turns out to not be the right change, and it'll embarrass Sylvia or him, or frustrate him. All the annoyance in the break room comes to a halt because they get two different DOAs. Sipowicz and Simone and Russell get a DOA of a burnt body underneath the FDR in a car, and Medavoy gets a call from Abby, his lesbian friend who's having his child, that there was a push-in robbery at her place and her girlfriend is now killed.
Someone was sure pushing in, yeah.
And
but wait, can we? I was like really fascinated and we're kind of just glossing over it.
Okay, well, bring
and
up what
I'd like to talk about it real quick.
What are you fascinated by?
Sipowicz gets uptight over 34 cents in change from Medavoy. Like, that's lunatic level.
That's lunatic level?
That's like Sipowicz is a lunatic.
Why would you say
because
that?
Because 34 cents can't buy you shit in that time. So why are you freaking out over 34 cents that you can, like, get tomorrow?
It's not about the 34 cents.
I knew you were going to say that. As soon as I wrote this down in my notes, I put a little thing on the side. I said, Kirk's going to say it's not about the money.
It's about the fact that there's always a little bit off what it's supposed to be.
Okay, but, like, Sipowicz isn't always... Sipowicz, when it came to his weight loss challenge, never ponied up and was on it. But Medavoy wasn't up his ass about it all the time.
We don't know the results. We don't know the results of that weight loss challenge. We don't know if he...
But the whole thing I was saying is, like, Sipowicz was leading Medavoy on with that weight loss challenge over and over and over about when they were going to start. And Medavoy was pretty cool with it until finally one time Medavoy was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, blah, blah, blah. Sipowicz, over 34 cents, is being a douche.
Okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk
it's
about
douche
this.
Status.
We could talk about this. I mean, the main point of this episode has nothing to do with this. But I understand Sipowicz. I think it is overreacting because it is only 30 cents. But I understand his frustration if it happens every single time he does it. Because it's one thing where, okay, you look back at the money and you go, oh, wow, someone stiffed me 30 cents. But if someone stiffs you, like, 30 cents every single time you get the food and you don't do it for them, that's just consideration.
Okay, hold on. Going back to what you were saying about the weight loss thing, how you were like, we don't know the results of that. We don't know exactly how many times Medavoy has stiffed Andy. Maybe it was just those two times, and Andy's taking this way out of context and out of control. Because it's not like Andy has the greatest fucking temperament. And also, he's in a bad mood on the morning to begin with. Like, you could see he's just, like, annoyed with everything. I'm just saying, it's 34 cents, like, fucking chill. Just chill.
Okay.
Like, that's all it was. It was 34 cents. Like, it just fascinated me how uptight he was. First, really, it's only 20 cents, because the 14 has already happened. Sylvia was 14 cents short, that had already happened, so that's fine. Really, what he's uptight about right now is, like, is like two dimes. That's what he's, like, losing his shit about.
Okay.
Lunatic status.
Okay, I agree, it's a little much. It was a little much. Anyway.
It's a lot of much. It's a lot of mucho, Kirk.
This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. When we come back from the break, Medavoy, Jill Kirkendall, and James Martinez go to Abby's place, where her girlfriend was shot and killed in the hallway, and Abby was also hit. Medavoy is obviously very concerned. His lesbian friend is carrying his child. Did you notice how weird the uniform officer was about them being lesbians?
Yeah, everyone acts really weird about it. Like the way they talk about them living together, everyone tries to, like, has to be, like, super secretive about it. It's kind of, like, weird.
It's always the two shared the residence. She's pregnant, but the two shared the residence. Like, almost like they're a couple. Like, they've decided to live together as a couple.
Like, you know, love each other and be with each other and have a family.
Abby is obviously shaken up, describes the gentleman as, like, a white, average height, druggy look, very nondescript. Says it was a push-in robbery, that he shot her girlfriend, whose name I definitely remember, but I'm not...
Doesn't Martinez give a little bit of attitude about her description?
Kathy. Yeah, he does. Because he says...
Kathy. It's Kathy. Sorry.
It's Kathy the writer. Because I remember we said in a previous episode, why is Medavoy getting the groceries if one of them's a writer? Why isn't the writer getting the fucking groceries? She doesn't have hours. Yeah, Martinez gives her a little attitude where he's like, oh, so nondescript. Which is kind of like, hey, fuck you, Martinez. She just watched her loved one die. But, you know.
Yeah, do you think Martinez is a little bit, like, homophobic? I'm getting, like, a hint that, like, Martinez is, like, this is also going back to, like, the year, like, last season, too. Like, I have a feeling that, like, Martinez's character is, like, cool with what's her name?
Abby. And Kathy.
Abby, because Greg's cool with it, but, like, he's a little, like, old-school Catholic when it comes to, like, he's just kind of weirded out by these two lesbians trying to have, like, a family.
I mean, that does make a lot of sense, actually.
I don't know, maybe I'm reading into it too much, but it feels like from the get-go, from this whole thing, like, I mean, maybe that's what they're trying to convey, not trying to spoil it, but from, like, the get-go, he doesn't fucking believe a word Abby says.
I think he's suspicious, and I think he's more suspicious than Jill is. Jill and Martinez, as we go down the story, are suspicious that maybe Abby did it and is, like, covering up, because there's no blood trail to the phone, because she called Medavoy. They think there's holes in the story because it doesn't make sense that there'd be a push-in robbery where the guy doesn't take anything.
Mm-hmm.
All he took was their keys or some car keys. So Medavoy's like, I have to get the particulars from you about that. But there's immediate doubt. But it does make sense that maybe Martinez has a little bit of that underlying homophobia that isn't really talked about, but is possibly there.
I don't know, maybe I'm just looking too much into it.
I mean,
into this little TV show.
If that's not what we're doing here, I don't know what we're doing here. So, looking too much into this TV
show. Yeah, if we're not gonna, you know, waste our lives breaking down this TV show no one watches anymore, then I don't know what we're doing here, Kirk, alright? Sorry.
I mean, it's true. I'll continue with Medavoy's story, because that's the main story. It's three girls and a baby. One of the girls is dead, one of the girls is Abby, and the other girl is one we'll meet later. Medavoy is talking about the case with Abby while Martinez is talking to Gina, who's having some feminine difficulty, which is what Martinez calls it.
Yeah, the way to see men in the 90s try to write, like, write about, like, periods and shit is pretty funny.
Well, she doesn't have period problems. She has,
Said and shit. I'm combining all of it.
Combining all those female problems into
one. Yeah, all those female things.
All those.
That you guys can thank Eve. That's what I've always said. When women get all upset, I say thank Eve, man. Thank her.
She just needed to have an apple.
She just needed to bite that fruit.
While they're
always being stingy.
While the men are telling the women to calm down a bit, the next door neighbor, or maybe not next door, the across the hall neighbor, comes in, who's an NYU resident, who's a bit of a dick from moment one.
As most NYU professors are.
And, well, he's an NYU professor slash doctor, surgeon, something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
He's, because he said he had to be called in for some type of surgery or something, and that's why he couldn't help them out when it happened. NYU doctors are like that? I mean, I don't know.
No, I don't know about that. I was going to say, I just know that NYU does have a hospital that, like, the school uses, and definitely probably has people in there and teachers in there, so yeah, that makes sense.
It's not just a shell corporation.
Yeah, they're not just, you know, yeah, whatever. It's whatever, not a, dude, fuck you.
It's not a goddamn ghost town with Carol and Pepe Silvia.
Carol!
Well, they bring in the neighbor who... He has to mention that they're lesbians every other sentence, and says that they get into fights, and he didn't come to the door, the peephole, until he was sure it was safe. And Greg, of course, gets uppity with him, because he believes he's using epithets, which, I didn't know lesbians were an epithet, maybe it's just the way he's saying it.
Yeah, I don't remember him saying anything else, but I remember the episode of the kids on the bus.
Yeah.
And he got upset then, like, they used worse language there than this guy, you know what I mean?
It's just because the guy kept saying, the lesbian's apartment. Like, because he was saying it like that, Greg was getting more and more upset, and assuming that he thinks Abby is the one who did it, they basically come up with nothing, and when Jill and Martinez even approach the subject that maybe Abby did it, and made up the story, or... Some things aren't lining up. Medavoy freaks the fuck out on him.
Do you think maybe he's freaking out because he's realizing that he'll have to take care of the child? like, do you think?
Yeah,
like it's hit him. Like, oh fuck! If she killed this guy or killed oh god this guy, if she killed this bitch,
wow,
that's my sperm in her. Like, I am, like, responsible.
He'd be on Google on how late an abortion can be.
Jesus. Wow, Kirk.
No, the thing...
Medavoy ain't doing that. Medavoy's too good of a guy.
First off, he's not that good of a guy. He already has two kids. He's already ignoring. So we can throw that out.
True. He hasn't talked about his kids in, like, six seasons. No, like,
he has two children he's not even worrying about. So he's not that good of a guy. But
Kirk, I've seen this whole TV show probably, like, at least three times, right? That's being generous.
Yeah.
It's probably at least four or five. I don't know his kids' names. I should be able to.
Yeah, so should he.
There goes, like, years where he does not talk about his fucking kids.
So, I didn't even put that together, but he'd be like, man, I can't pawn these off onto an ex-wife, because she'd be dead. So, yeah, maybe. I think he... Because Medavoy gets so, aggressively... animated about things, I think he was just like, there's no way Abby did this. Abby is my friend. And then when they're like, hey, Medavoy, what about the stuff that doesn't make sense? He's like, oh my god, what if my friend did this? Like, he only goes 0 to 100. Like, he doesn't respond. He only reacts to everything that happens.
There's some pretty, I mean, we're jumping ahead, but there's some pretty A-list acting, too, going on.
Oh, yeah. We're getting there, because this scene, what saves him is the fact that they found the car.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Jill, she's like, do you want to look for push-in robbery similarities until we can go look at the car? Like, she's basically babysitting him, where she's like, do you want to do this until we can go look at the car? And even one of my favorite characters, Martens, he comes in and he's like, hey, so I understand you have a case with a uniform in the precinct. And he's like, yeah. He's like, people are saying it's a lover's quarrel. And Medavoy's like, well, she's saying it was a push-in robbery. And Martens just looks right at him. He's like, is that what she's saying? And just, like, gauging his reaction. Like, I don't know. It was cool because even Martens was like, you know, it's possible that it was a lover's quarrel.
I also think Martens knows that, like, that's Greg's baby.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He should not be on this case, right?
At all.
He shouldn't be anywhere near it.
At all. As soon as he got the call and he turned around and said, like, to Fancy, like, oh my god, Abby's been shot, blah, blah, blah. Fancy should have sent Medavoya Martinez, and then he should have followed and then gotten Greg out of there. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or, like, told Greg, like, hey, we'll go to the scene together. Jill and Martinez are going to go ahead first, and then we're going to come in behind them, but you are not going over there now. Like, he should not have been the first person to talk to her.
Yeah, and it would have been a more interesting thing, now that we're rewriting it over 10 years afterwards, it would have been a more interesting thing, at least in my opinion, if they have to hide the fact that she's pregnant with his baby from IAB, but also, like, because that's not even a problem with this story. Like, that's not even brought up at all. It's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm the father of this baby, and I'm the head of the investigation. And at no point is anybody like, okay, well, maybe we shouldn't have you head. And there would have been suspicions among the other police officers that that's what's going on. So, I don't know. It's weird. It's a very weird story all around. That leads to a very intense acting moment from Paige Turco, who plays Abby, who, of course, is April O'Neil from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, and 3, Turtles in Time. Because
She's all over the map.
This is gonna be on her reel when she's sending it out to get auditions and such.
In her in memoriam. This is what they're gonna use.
Because the Medavoy brings up his concerns, and then she shouts at him, like, ask what you want to ask, Medavoy.
That's the scene I was talking about. That's the scene where the acting was unbelievable.
It's up and down, and
ask what you want to ask, Greg!
Spot on impression.
Did I do it? Did I kill Abby?
Kathy, Abby's the one talking.
Whatever, Kathy, Abby, don't have names that rhyme.
If you're a lesbian couple, heed my words.
Don't have names that rhyme. That's rule one of lesbian couples.
Change one of your names. So he brings up the car vandalized in anger and asks, do you know anybody who would do that? When she says, no, I didn't do this, but the car being on Delancey Street is kind of an interesting thing. And she brings up an ex-girlfriend. Now, I don't know. Call me crazy. But if I had an ex...
All right, what's up, crazy?
If I had an ex-girlfriend who at one point was stalking me and, like, following me, and then I once saw her on the subway and now, like, I'm with a girl who's pregnant, that's who I would assume would pull something like this immediately.
You've never, ever talked to Greg about this?
Ever. This has never been brought up.
This dude put semen in you. And you've never, like, casually mentioned the one time you had a girlfriend who, like, emotionally couldn't handle you guys breaking up, so you had to go to therapy so she could be ready for it, and then even after that she stalked you. Like, you never once brought that up to Greg. Like,
I'm sorry. What? He put semen in you. Oh man, that's
dumped
funny.
A bunch of his Medavoys in you.
He put, like, a lot of his Medavoy swimmers. Yeah, she brings up this Denise McCall, who, the second she describes her, it's like, why didn't you immediately think of her? But it's a traumatic experience. A loved one died. Medavoy gets harder with her, like, why didn't you think about this? That wasn't germane. He has a bunch of Batman 66 vocabulary in this show. Like, at one point he goes, I'm aghast you'd say that, James. And then you didn't think that was germane. Like, all these
When he gets flustered or, like, taken aback, he becomes, like, like a 1920s, like, Southern Belle. Or, like, an 1866, like, Deadwood style and shit.
Which
is funny, because he's in Deadwood, and he has to talk like that, and it fits him.
he turns into a walking thesaurus, just out of nowhere.
Turns into a douche.
And he's, like, screaming at this woman... and then immediately pulls back once she's like, yeah, I didn't think about it till now, Greg. And he's like, okay, okay, where can I find her? Okay. Like, he goes up and down so much. And then she's like, she might be at this address or this bar called Lulu's. And he goes, some lesbian bar. Like, just so accusatory. Like, no, it's a straight bar she likes to hang out in. Like,
yeah, he even gets a little homophobic for a sec.
Some lesbian bar.
I feel like as he's going through all of this, he's kind of like, he's like, oh, these lesbians, like, of course.
The next time we see him, he's talking about Gina with Martinez, who's saying she's spotting, I guess. But she has to be on bed rest.
Yeah.
And the only thing they could find, because they couldn't find Denise, but they could find the prints on the car belonged to this Tommy Lang character. So they bring him in. And this Tommy Lang dude, you know what? I like him because he's a straight shooter. Tommy Lang comes in and he goes, look, okay, I shot her and killed her. All right, I did it. He's calling him the D word. He's just saying, look, man, I was hired to do the murder. I wasn't going to do it. I was just going to do a push-in robbery. I only got robberies on my sheet. But then this lesbian pulls out a gun, and I'm like, hey, man, that's not cool, so I killed her.
Doesn't he say something along the lines like, this dyke pulled out a gun on me or something?
And the guy, and then he's like, yeah, but she didn't even get a shot off on you. And he goes, no, it turns out I'm the better draw. Like, just so matter-of-factly. And then what I love about this interview is he's like, look, you gotta talk to this crazy woman, Denise. She knew her pattern, she knew where to find him and what to do. And he's like, oh yeah, I was put with her at Lula's, or you could try her address. And he's like, well, what's gonna happen to me? Because at one point, Fancy comes in and says, hey, Abby called, Denise is across the street in her car, so they're gonna go pick her up.
Yeah, then it gets really, really weird.
But what I love is, I have to mention this because it makes me laugh every time I saw it. They're like, okay, so we got Denise, we're going to go pick her up. And then Tommy Lang's like, well, what happens to me? And then Martinez is like, oh, I don't know, you openly admitted to killing a woman.
Yeah. Like, you're going to go to jail.
He's like, it doesn't really matter if someone paid you to and you didn't intend to do it. You have murdered someone, so you're not going anywhere.
You're not going to take all of the blame, but you're going to take at least 50%.
You're going to go to prison. We're not sure for what yet. We'll sort it out in a minute, but you're not going anywhere. And then they bring in Denise, and, you know, she's passionate. We'll say she's passionate. A little crazy, but passionate. She's like, we were the ones making plans to have a baby. Then the interloper shows up, and suddenly she's walking around pregnant. Well, now she has no choice but to be with me. And then everyone's looking at her like, okay, this bitch is crazy. And she's like, yeah, you look. You look at me. He's like, okay, you
She sounds like every stereotypical lesbian I've met.
She sounds just like Ellen DeGeneres. But what's really weird is she's like, they're like, you're going to have to write it down, Denise. And she goes, good, we can stack up my writing to hers. Because it's like...
yeah, she has this hard-on about, like, their writing.
Because the other woman, the writer, apparently is not as good a writer as she is, even though I doubt that's what lesbians are really looking for. I don't know, because I'm not a lesbian. But I think writing ability...
I mean, maybe that's what gets Abby wet. It's just like a good, like, sentence.
Oh my gosh. A good like sentence.
A paragraph. Like, maybe Kathy was writing her a paragraph every night.
Abby comes in while they're interrogating her and getting the confession, and she gives a very intense performance that I don't really want to talk about because I don't want to say it's bad. I'm just going to say I don't know if it got what it intended to get out of me.
That was weird.
Because she's like,
okay to say that.
Because she's like, I want to be a part of life, and I am, because I have my baby. And it's like, yeah, you're going to be a single mom who's a uniform cop. It's not really the best of situations. And then Medavoy's like...
So I think it's like the perfect situation to bring a child into. You were born into violence, and then you become Harry Potter. Like,
what?
Then you become... What other heroes there? Luke Skywalker.
Like, you become Harry Potter. And then after her breakdown moment, Denise sees her as she comes out of her interrogation room and starts screaming. And they have to, like, pull them apart.
Baby a lot. That's freaking me out. Like, anyone who says, baby a lot to their significant other...
It's weird.
Weirds me out. You know what I mean?
I'm also not into this wave of girls using the phrase daddy to describe hot dudes. Not down with that. Not down with that at all.
That's disgusting.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't describe women as, as a mommy.
Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, dude. It's a weirdo shit right there.
The other story that's happening during this episode that we haven't even talked about...
Which I think is the more interesting story.
It is. It really is. The body that's burnt in a car underneath the FDR, Simone, Russell, and Sipowicz go to check it out, and it's clear that the body was shot in the head and then set on fire inside the car. The guy who saw the fire was a black dude named Jim Chaney.
Why does the color of his skin matter?
It doesn't, but I did want to mention that every time they said his name... I always miss the Jim part, and I heard Chaney, and I was like, are they talking about Dick Chaney? And then I look up, and I was like, no, that's right, the character's name is Jim Chaney. Don't know why, but it happened. He just saw the white guy dump gas on the car and light it. He had no idea that there was a body inside. And then the detectives get upset that the fire marshal called the owner of the vehicle, which could impede their investigation, because it could have been involved.
Oh, that makes sense. I get that.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Julie is not the owner of the vehicle. Why did I say Julie? Well, they don't know who it is yet.
Yeah, they don't know who it is. They just know the owner of the vehicle.
And they know it's a woman because of muscle tissue in the breast area.
Them titties.
Yes, or the scientific term, dem titties. So,
dem tatties.
So the car owner is inside the
house. Knockers, dude.
The car owner, who I can't remember his name, they go to that address... And they ask him about the car, which he says his daughter drives. His daughter, Julie. He says it was involved in a crime.
He's being a real big weirdo about it.
The dad?
Yeah.
I just thought he came off as a concerned father. He was worried about his daughter, so he was asking a lot of questions.
I thought he came off as an idiot. Because there was a point where they asked, does your daughter live here? And he responds, yeah, she's out of high school, as long as she's all right. That was his answer to, does your daughter live here? What?
Well, I mean...
What?
Saying she's an adult, but she still lives at home, I think that was the point. He's just concerned because she hasn't come home yet or called.
But, like, you should really, really try to, go... I feel like everyone should rewatch that part where they're asking him questions... Because I feel like the whole thing, he's not answering any of their questions with answers that matter. I don't know. I just felt like he was coming. It was funny.
Maybe. I didn't even notice it or think of it that way. But they get...
Well, I mean, you're kind of dumb, so that's fair.
Okay, fine, I guess. They bring in all of the detectives into the house or into the apartment because, like, it's a fucking family reunion, apparently. Because... The girl's parents are there, her aunt, who's the mom's sister, and her cousin, who is named Jamie, is sitting in there smoking. I think it's his father. I think it's the dad's birthday party or something, or it was.
Yeah.
And they mention that she has an ex-boyfriend named Sam DePaul, who's an asshole. They call him a creep. They don't like him. Yeah, they do not like this dude. Like, they can't say anything positive about him, which is fine. Turns out he's a murderer, but spoiler alert.
Spoiler!
They also, what I loved about this episode is there was a part where they go, oh, so the car's involved with some type of crime? And then from them saying that, it turns into Sam DePaul did something with their car. Like, they didn't say that at all. Like, it came in and said, hey, your car's been involved with a crime. Suddenly, Sam DePaul used their car for a crime. And they never said that, the detectives. So they're trying to help, but they're doing it because they already assume it's Sam DePaul, and it's Sam DePaul who did something with the car, but they just want to make sure their daughter is safe.
Yes.
But they also don't know who's involved yet, so they're like, yeah, if he calls back here, just let us know, but don't let him know that we're looking for him.
Yeah, that's the other thing that is tripping me out is, like, that's what the dad keeps saying that over and over. As long as she's all right.
And that's weird to you?
Well, because, like, either he's having, like, a mental breakdown, or, like, he doesn't know, like, I don't know, or he's an idiot. The questions they were asking, the answer he was giving them made no sense, and he just kept saying, as long as she's all right. So either, like, he knows something, you know what I mean? Like, the way he's acting also maybe took me off guard, because I felt like he was... Yeah, I felt like he knew something about it, because he kept saying, as long as she's all right, like he knew something wasn't right. You know what I mean?
I didn't take it that way. I thought it was, he figures, okay, something could have happened to the car, but as long as my daughter's okay, I don't care about the car. And he just kept saying that over and over, because he wants to convince himself she'll be fine.
Okay.
But it's, what happens is, the aunt throws Jamie under the bus, who's like Julie's cousin, the DOA's cousin.
Yeah.
And says, didn't you talk to Sam on the phone? And he's like, yeah, apparently she was supposed to pick him up somewhere, and then she never did, because he called back saying that he never got picked up. So then the detectives are like, well, how about you take us to where he lives, Jamie? And the next scene, Jamie took them to where he lives, and she's like, I don't want to go in. He might be a dangerous guy if he did a crime in the car. Could you drop me off elsewhere? And I was like, this Jamie bitch is the worst.
Oh, yeah, she's probably going to go do, like, coke or something.
Because because she was straight up like, oh, okay, whatever gets me out of doing the dishes, when they were like, could you tell us where Sam DePaul is? And then when they get there, she's like, well, I don't want to get involved with this because it might be dangerous, but could you take your car and your time and drop me somewhere else other than home?
Yeah, like, away from this area where you need to be, where, like, this guy is at. Can you take me, like, and then, like, they drive her somewhere else, and don't they say, we'll come back?
Well, no, Russell just takes the keys and says, you guys can get...
Oh, that's right, Russell just takes them.
And then she looks at Simone's like, you guys can get a radio car back, right? And then just takes the keys and is like, what the fuck? Tell the bitch to start walking. It's fucking New York City. Get a fucking subway. Like, I do not understand.
I would have kicked her out.
So Simone and Sipowicz head up to where Sam DePaul lives. They interact with some of the people who live there, and they hate Sam DePaul because they were like, you don't live here. They pull out badges. He's like, we're looking for Sam DePaul. And he's like, oh, good. His mom and stepdad are here. They keep arguing. I would hate to see them not be my neighbors anymore. And it's like, wow, fucking hate them. Okay.
They fucking can't stand them. And when they come up to the door, all you hear is, like, yelling and screaming anyways, so.
Oh, I did have a quote here. Sipowicz, after dealing with Jamie, said, families like that in the communication room of the Titanic is why it sank.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he said some stupid shit like that.
So, they go to the door, they're screaming at each other. When they open the door...
Screaming at each other.
When they open the door, the stepdad is clearly drunk, and he mentions that he's on the job. And he gets in Sipowicz's face when Sipowicz is like, we want to talk to the lady, and not you. He mentions something like, why don't you work Harlem? And Sipowicz was like, I was working Harlem when you were in high school, so you need to step back. And Simone just puts his hand on his check. He puts his hand on his chest and pushes him back against the wall and says, yeah, right there. Kind of like, fuck off.
But he talks to him like he's a dog or an ant or like a baby.
Which is good, because he's an asshole.
He's like, right there, Tommy. Right there.
The mom is basically useless. Also, slightly famous face, it's Lee Garlington, who was in the film Cobra. Any fans of Cobra? And the Disney Channel original movie, Can of Worms.
What was she in Cobra?
I think she was like a woman that turned out to be part of the evil Axe gang. Because I'm sure you remember Cobra.
No way, Kirk, she was a woman? Sorry.
There weren't many women in Cobra. It was Brigitte Nielsen.
True, very true.
It was Brigitte Nielsen and I think this woman. And oh, those are the women. She says, I don't know where my son is, but I'll let him know that you're looking for him. And they said, no, don't do that. Just tell us when he comes home. And they said, well, we should just get Night Watch to set up on here, because I don't think they're going to do anything.
Yeah, and they don't know when he's going to come back.
They start going down the stairs, and Simone says, we got to tell that family, Andy. And Andy says, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, don't you find it weird that they've held off that long not telling them?
Well, I think they wanted to make sure that the family wasn't involved. And once they got a sight of Sam DePaul's place and the kind of situation he has, and they, like, kind of thought about the family involvement, they probably have nothing to do with it, and they probably have just been putting it off. The next scene, really, is they're telling the family. They react as you would imagine the parents of a child who's been shot and set on fire would be. What's really weird is they said she's been shot and set on fire in the car, and then they ask, is she dead? Which I imagine, if you've been shot and set on fire, you don't have a whole lot of survivor rate.
Yeah.
Is she dead? Well, probably. And the mom puts a hole in the wall and they cry. It's an emotional scene.
That whole scene was a little too over the top, I felt like. But, I mean, it was their daughter, I guess, like, I don't know. But, I don't know, I just felt like that mom must be real strong.
Because that's a wall she punched.
That's a wall she put her fist through.
That's not an easy thing to do. The next scene, Simone is drinking coffee when he usually drinks tea, and he's passing out flyers about Sam DePaul, and a uniform cop, flags him down and says, "Hey, you looking for this Sam DePaul? He was a part of a traffic stop I did." He's like, where was this traffic stop? In front of his place. He got out and went up to his apartment.
Yeah.
So that means the Night Tour guys just were asleep through it. So the uniform cop, who, this is just my opinion, I don't know if anybody else sees it or knows what I'm talking about, that uniform cop kind of looks like the lead singer of Drug Church, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, I don't know who Drug Church is.
They're a really awesome band, and their lead singer kind of looks like that uniform cop. But the uniform cop did not have neck tattoos.
Okay.
So the Night Tour dudes were just sleeping through it. Simone tells a story about how Sipowicz needs to have that nose surgery because he's snoring like crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That reminds me of Dad.
Yeah, it's very, you know, because our father was quite the snorer.
Was? What are you talking about?
Well, he doesn't do it as much anymore. He's got the CPAP machine. Which, if he does snore, you can't hear it over the CPAP machine. Simone comes up to tell Sipowicz the story that the Night Tour guys slept through Sam DePaul going into his own place after being stopped by a cop, and he just says, no, they didn't, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, because Simone knew what was going to happen if he found out, especially since they had to sleep up in the crib.
And Sipowicz claims he never slept because he couldn't sleep in that bed. Which we know is funny and not true. So they go to pick up Joe and Sam because he was pulled over with a gentleman named Joe. They bring in Sam DePaul, who complains about sleep before his interrogation, to which they respond, "Do not complain to us about sleeping." Simone.
That was really funny when they started giving him shit for that.
Simone lays out his plan about how he killed Julie. And it's a good interrogation scene, how it lays out, but the cool part really is Simone uses the phrase alibi, and it doesn't faze the guy. He just says, that's what happened, and he goes, that's weird, I said alibi, and you just let it pass right by you. Sip hits him Sip hits him when he gets cute, and they said, well, we got your buddy Joe in the next room, and Sam DePaul yells out, yeah, you ask him what he saw, which gives an indication that he may not have seen anything, but he may know what has happened.
That I felt like was a really stupid move on that dude's part. Like, I don't think he should have said anything.
And
have just kept his mouth shut.
And they go to talk to Joe, and he's all smiles and giggles and shit. He calls Russell Charlie's Angel for some reason.
Yeah, that was weird. Like, we get it, Russell's attractive.
And he admits that he picked up Sam, but that he went to the Adonis Club when they said, fine, you're going to go to prison for assisting in a murder. And they start to get up, and he goes, no, here's the deal. He had a Pepsi bottle full of gas, and he told me to park around the corner. He came back after a large explosion, and then we drove off. And I'm like, okay, well, that's all you're giving us. And he's like, look, he also said now they won't even know she was shot. And that's all they need to go back at Sam.
Because Sipwitz goes in there hot.
They go back at Sam, and they say, basically, they just say the quote, now they won't even know she was shot, because that's basically an admission of shooting and
doing, yeah.
Shooting and burning. And he tries to come up with all these excuses, and eventually they just agree that it was an accident. And he,
well, I think, so, yeah, Sipowicz scares him into admitting / saying it was an accident, yeah, for sure.
They get annoyed when he says, oh yeah, the gun is, I threw it off the train, it was by one of those adopted highways. I'll remember the name, and they're like, we don't care, just write down what you did.
Yeah.
The end of the episode was technically Medavoid taking out Abby during Denise's tirade, so that's the end of the episode.
This was the acting episode.
There was definitely a lot of acting. There's a lot of capital A, in quotes, acting.
Yeah, this is, they were going for it.
Anything else you want to say about that episode besides the acting?
No, I mean, I just think Sipwitz needs to relax over 34 cents.
You think the character needs to relax about the 34 cents?
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. Well, every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and where you find a podcast. We're at AstroBrosPod on Twitter, AstroBrothersPodcast on Instagram. And that's it. Have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, the show is available on Amazon Instant Streaming and Hulu. Amazon will have the previously on NYPD Blues. Hulu will not. It is slightly an important decision if you're into the show like we are. If you need more information on NYPD Blue, there's a couple of books out there. There's What Would Sipwitz Do? A couple of articles written about the show. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons from the creators of the show. And then there's Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. There's lots of stuff out there other than our podcast about it. If you have a moment, please go rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening to it on. That's how it gets into people's algorithms, and then they actually might hear the show. And more importantly, go watch NYPD Blue. That's what this is really about. And here's actually a preview of two episodes from now, because we forgot to talk about something that we should have included in this episode, but we talked about it in Season 5, Episode 5, and here is that audio. They go to talk to the girl who's named Abby. No, not Abby. Annie. Annie Walters.
Oh. Abby is Medavoy's sperm bank.
Oh, okay. She has purpose.
Well, not anymore. The other part of her partner's dead.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I don't think they come back. But
oh no, I meant to bring that up. Yeah, she never comes back.
So she just has a kid off.
Like I think Medavoy makes like a random remark like, oh, Abby's going like upstate to be with her parents or be with her mom or something, if I vaguely remember. But she's like gone. It's like goodbye. Never coming back.